I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. There are more than 100 million people of African descent in Latin America. In nations including Brazil, Cuba, and the Dominican Republic, many Afro-Latinos say that race dominates politics and culture. The Miami Herald crafted a series about the black experience in Latin America. It's called A Rising Voice, Afro-Latin Americans. Reporters explored race relations in four countries: Nicaragua, Cuba, Brazil, and the Dominican Republic. Joining me now is John Yearwood, the Miami Herald's world editor and director of this project. Also joining us to talk more about race relations in Latin America is Carlos Moore. He's a Cuban-born black man, and he's featured in the series. Carlos has been studying race issues in Latin American countries for over 35 years. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Farai.
I'm so glad to get you guys on. And John, what made you decide to take on a project this big, and how did you pick the countries?
Well, it was interesting, Farai. I had been reading for quite some time about stories about Latin America, and one of the things that surprised me over time was that there weren't very many black voices in many of the stories. And I admit, many of those stories were published in my own, the Miami Herald. That I thought was not adequate, was not good enough. So I started looking into the question, why aren't we seeing more blacks in the American media? And what's the condition of blacks in Latin America? And as you might imagine, I spent several months working on it. And when I looked at the statistics, which showed that blacks in the region are more likely to be born into poverty, to die young, to read poorly, and to live in substandard housing, it was clear to me that we had to look much more deeply into what was going on.
Now, what surprised you the most out of everything that you researched?
One of the things that surprised me was that there was this consciousness that we found that was taking place in the region, as well as a civil rights movement. And perhaps the most surprising thing about that was that it was not just happening in the major cities, the urban areas of the region, but we found it in many of the small towns. Indeed, one of our reporters went to Bluefields in Nicaragua, and just to get to Bluefields, she had to go by road and then get on a little boat to cross the river to get into the town. And even in Bluefields, she found that there was this emergent consciousness there as well, the same thing that she had found in Managua, and other correspondents had found in Panama City and had found in Rio de Janeiro and other places.
Now, Carlos, let me turn to you. In the article in which you're featured, another Afro-Cuban says that there are seven different phrases that all are black, but different kinds of black. Is that really how race is parsed out in Cuba? And as a child, what were you told that you were? Who were you told that you were?
Well, let me start by clarifying something. You have much more than 100 million blacks in what is called Latin America. We estimate, the general estimate is that you have 150 million people of African descent in what is called Latin America. Concerning Cuba and concerning my own upbringing in Cuba, Cuba is no different from Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Uruguay in that sense. You have a general category of race relations which is common to what is called Latin America, in which people who are of African descent are broken up into many different categories. Here in Brazil, where I reside for the time being, blacks are broken down into something like 125 different categories. In Cuba, when I was growing up, we were broken up into something like 18 categories. So that in one single family, you could have 18 people, you could have people designating themselves blacks, all members of the same family, in 18 different ways. So when I was growing up in Cuba, I was designated as a Prieto, because there's no way I can designate myself in any other way. Prieto means somebody who is very dark-skinned, which is black, who is black-skinned. Someone who looks like Sidney Poitier is a Prieto in Cuba. But someone who looks like Harry Belafonte is not a Prieto in Cuba. He becomes a mulatto. And then you have three different types of categories in Cuba for what is called mulatto. You have a mulatto who is called a backward mulatto, an intermediate mulatto, and an advanced mulatto.
Carlos,
advanced mulatto would be someone like Lena Horne.
Carlos, let me jump in here, though. Is it a situation, John just talked about there being a sort of consciousness movement or a civil rights movement going on right now. Are people who have been scattered into these different categories recognizing a common interest, either in Brazil where you are now or in Cuba, to move forward and press for equality?
Yes, there is no question about it. In Cuba, the movement is strong. Of course, in Cuba, it is different than in Brazil. In Brazil, the movement is organized. You have more than 300 to 400 black organizations here in Brazil, which is what is called here in a loose way the black movement, Movimento Negro. In Cuba, of course, this is impossible. The Cuban government doesn't allow any sort of organization, political organization of any type, period. And least of all, organizations along lines which they consider dangerous, which is a black organization. So what you have in Cuba is a very unorganized, officially unorganized, widespread movement, which is a consciousness movement, which has been growing in the last 25 years and which is very strong right now.
John, let me jump in here. When you look at these different nations and you also throw into the mix the U.S. concepts of race and civil rights, what do you think that we, speaking broadly of people of African descent, whether in the U.S. or Latin America, can learn from each other's struggles?
And there's a lot that we can learn from each other, Faraya, so much so that I think that we have seen several African Americans involved and helping, if you will, to fuel this struggle. I mean, Congressman Gregory Meeks of New York has been very involved. He is particularly in the situation in Colombia. And one of the things that we were told repeatedly, regardless of which country our correspondents were in, was that blacks in the region have looked at the advancement of blacks in this country through the civil rights movement and looked at how blacks here benefited and are adopting some of the same methods that we used in this country. One of the interesting, going back to the question on Brazil, one of the most, I thought, interesting stories in the series came out of Brazil, where there was this gentleman who was fixing an elevator. And the problem is he had to use another elevator in the building. And when he got into that elevator, a white woman who was in the elevator sent him off. She says, go and use the service elevator. And he had indeed been fixing the service elevator. And he was so incensed at this that he took the woman to court. And he won. For discrimination. So it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, about this consciousness, this emergent consciousness. And he said he didn't just do it for him, but he also did it for his children and grandchildren.
We are really almost out of time, but Carlos, just briefly, what do you want to see happen in your home country of Cuba?
I want the majority of the population, which is black in Cuba, 62%, to be able to rule that country just like anybody else. That is what I want. And that's what I will be fighting for, and I'm ready to fight until the end for.
Well, Carlos, thank you so much. And John, thank you.
Thank you, Farai.
We've been speaking with Carlos Moore. He currently lives in Brazil and is writing a memoir, Pichon, The Story of My War with Castro Over Race. Also, John Yearwood, the Miami Herald's world editor. He directed the newspaper series A Rising Voice, Afro-Latin Americans. He spoke with us from member station WLRN in Miami.